grant has been. All right, you can start.
Okay, and we'll start with just a quick review of the tariff itself. As you are probably aware, it allows recovery of new or modified renewable generation that's not yet in our base rates, that is not eligible for fuel cost rider recovery, and that has been previously granted an ADP. So that's originally the tariff only included projects that were located inside the state of North Dakota, but obviously this morning we've had, with the approved settlement, that's been revised to include projects outside the state. So, and we've got some of those projects included in this 2019 rate filing. So on page three, this is the fourth year for the RER rider. We've got four new wind projects for a total of six now included. Three of them are located in North Dakota. The other three are in Minnesota and South Dakota. Again, we are reflecting the new lower ROE in this in these calculations. The revenue requirement is $2.1 million for 2019. That is, at least on a percentage basis, a fairly significant increase from the revenue requirement that we used in the current rate. And so the rate is increasing, whereas currently our typical impact is about 21 cents a month. For a residential customer, it's going up 50 cents to 71 cents a month. We have a similar table on page four that provides you with some history. You can see that generally in the first couple of years of the rate, our revenue requirements were in that $2 million area, and then in 2018 it dropped quite a bit down to $643. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And now again for 2019 we're back up in the $2.1 million range. So on slide five we have a similar comparison with the 2018 to the 2019, and actually, if I was to really cut to the chase on this, 2018 is an unusually low number. There was a sizable true-up from 2017 that reduced our 2018 revenue requirement, and we were also forecasting a pretty high production tax credit number. And that's a credit, so that also lowered the overall revenue requirement quite a bit. So that $3 million that you see there in the 2018 column is the highest PTC estimate that we had made up to this point in time. So those two factors alone really pushed down the total revenue requirement in 2018. So what we see in 2019 now with the addition of four new projects is we're adding about $1.7 million of revenue requirements with those projects. Our production tax credit forecast here is modest. We've reduced it a little bit for the existing Courtney and Border Winds projects, and then added a few more to reflect the PTCs from Foxtail. And also the other three projects, although those other three projects are going to generate very few production tax credits because they're all going in the very tail end of the year. So bottom line is we're at $2.1 million again, even with the addition of the four new projects.
Why would it drop slightly other than you indicated it being the production tax credits from 2018 to 2019? You said you used a very conservative.
Well, 2018 figure did not materialize. We had forecasted, as you see here, about $3.1 million in production tax credits. I think we only realized $2.3 million from that. So we were pretty aggressive on the credit side there in that estimate. So in the 2019, then we backed off a little bit with our estimate for the Courtney and Border Winds. Is that what you were asking?
Is it a capacity factor issue? Or
Ben, if you're on the line, was it the TCJA that reduced the value of the production tax credit somewhat that caused us to underrun our forecast?
Yeah, TCJA does have an impact on those amounts of PTCs. And just to kind of add to that a little bit, you know, where we actually ended in 2018 was roughly $2.4 million of PTCs, as opposed to the $3 million that we had in last year's filing. And so when we compare that then to 2019, there is a little increase, and so that's more of an apples-to-apples type comparison.
I need to go up a line from that even. So for 18, you've got $4.4 million in capital costs on the two projects. Are those projects being charged off over the course of how many years?
25.
Okay, so you're adding four more projects, so there should be a bunch of more costs. It seems to me if it was 4.4 on the two for 18, there's still 4.4 because they haven't been around 25 years yet. They're not going off the books. So you got 4.4 for 19 for those same two projects, and so you only have another 900,000 for the other four?
Yeah, a couple of things going on there. First of all, the 2018 amount does not reflect the TCJA impact, so they're sort of overstated there because those were the numbers used in the 2018 estimate. So they're a little higher. If we were to normalize, if we were to include the tax savings, that would probably be down in the $4.1 million area.
For 2018.
Right. So that's one thing. The other thing is the new projects are all coming in right at the tail end of the year, so they're not going to have quite the revenue requirement impact that you might think, whereas the Courtney and Border Winds projects have been in place now for 2 or 3 years, so they're getting the full year's revenue requirement calculation.
Okay, I know I'm over-rounding here, but so you get where I'm coming. So you said the 4.4 was a little high because of TCJA.
Right.
I think you said 4.1.
Yep.
Let's just say 4. And
okay.
There's two projects,
yep.
So $2 million each.
Right.
Should I expect that in 2020 or 21, when those other four projects are in, that they're each going to be probably about $2 million each, so we're like talking more like $12 million of the capital-related cost?
I'm going to say yes, and Benj, if you want to add anything to that, as time goes on here, in 2020 we would expect those newer projects to be contributing a lot more to the revenue requirement total, or those four projects.
Yes, that's accurate, and most of them are around that $2 million mark. I think the one that exceeds that is Crown Ridge, which is a larger wind farm.
Okay, but to use that as just the real rough guidepost. When we get then, you said 25 years, so when we get to, say, 2030, now the PTCs are gone, but these costs aren't, so then whoever's in these commission seats at the time are still going to be looking at $12 million a year in capital costs, except for we won't have this well over half of that amount of production tax credits to subtract from it. And so it's going to be significantly more our renewable energy rider costs for those consumers, correct?
Correct.
So why, I'll let you finish answering, but you can just add this to your answer. Why aren't we capitalizing these projects in the same course of time that we are doing the production tax credits, which pay for most of it?
In other words, have the costs and the production tax credits over the same time period?
Yeah, or at least take most of the costs so that if there's $2 million cost for a wind farm and the tax credits are expected to be $1.5 million, make it so that it
would, you know, maybe you'd figure $3 million of it up front and get $1.5 million to our cost. So then later when the PTCs drop off, you only have to be doing $1.5 million per year, balance it out. It seems to me it's going to be a stunning hit on people who are now younger and not paying attention maybe to this in 10 years when they have to start paying the full load on this.
Yeah, I mean, potentially there could be some significant rate impacts. I think it would also depend a little bit on what fuel costs and what costs are for energy in general in 2030 as well, just because these costs are pretty much known, they're fixed. And so it's...
You're going opposite of what I thought was a way these worked, and that my understanding for why we have these riders to begin with, especially for wind projects, is because the projects are more expensive on the front end. And so you could bake them into rates here, but then over time your costs are going to be dropping and the revenue requirement drops, and it's harder to reflect that in base rates. It's easier to reflect that on an annual basis through a rider. So I thought that the costs, it's not going to be the same costs for the first 5 years that you're going to have in the last 5 years. The capital costs won't be the same, will they?
The revenue requirements are generally declining over time as the net plant becomes smaller and it gets depreciated. Then the calculations of debt and equity return and all those things do go down, and that's why we even see part of the reduction for the existing projects. Even if it was $4 million for 2018, it's still going down in 2019. Part of it is that. Mm-hmm. So that is occurring.
Yeah.
There is a decline.
And maybe it's not so much a part of this case, but either staff can tell me if they can do this or if it's something that I would like someone from the company to work with me on. I'm curious what our expectations are of, let's just say, one of these two existing facilities, of capital costs that you expect to be charging for in these years and go through that whole 25 years. I'm curious what they are at the end. I don't need to learn it as part of this case, but it's a big concern I have that we are cheating the next generation by spreading the costs over 25 years and taking all the benefits in 10.
Victor, I presented that question to you in a roundabout way, and you had given some really good background information on it.
Yeah, we've had some discussions around here about this idea in the past. It's actually something Otter Tail had proposed in a previous proceeding, and the commission rejected it, I think, before any of these commissioners were around. Mm-hmm. But essentially levelizing the PTC values, mm-hmm, over the life of the project versus taking them all in 10 years. Because as we know, if we take them as we receive them in year 11, we get a big spike in the cost, higher than pretty much any other year. Because, you know, if you just kind of look at our rough numbers, you know, our plan for 2019, we have $5.3 million of costs, and, you know, well over half of it is being paid for with PTCs. Well, you know, somewhere around there, I realize that the cost decreases over time, but, you know, in a year 11, we're going to have a $3 million increase simply because PTCs no longer exist, where if we somehow tried to level that out, I haven't seen what a real-world example of that would look like. I'm sure the overall cost may go up to the ratepayers by spreading that out, but I don't know what those kind of numbers would look like. I guess I'd be interested, not necessarily in this proceeding, but seeing what that would look like.
Yeah, just to respond to a couple of things, we're happy to work with you on that and talk about what levelization would look like. I do agree. I think it would raise costs only because what you're doing is delaying the provision of the PTC benefit to customers, and that delaying on a present value basis is certainly going to delay the benefits make the benefits a little bit smaller. But I think that we're talking probably in terms of a little bit, not a material, and certainly not going to take these projects out of the money. The only other things I'll say is, it's just to clarify what Dave already mentioned, is the depreciation expense does get lower over time. And as we provided a chart kind of through the entire life of our projects in our ADP filings, and it shows that spike as the PTCs expire in 2029. But the the projects still result in savings even then. So after that period, the savings are substantially smaller than they were the year before when the PTCs were in effect and the project had declined in revenue requirement over time. But that decline in revenue requirement is enough to withstand the expiration of the PTC such that you're not actually going to have a rate shock. You're just going to have a substantial reduction in benefits associated with the project. But again, from an intergenerational equity standpoint, it still may be, you know, in the commission's interest or in staff's interest to look at levelizing the PTCs, and we're happy to talk about that.
We move on to slide six. We have a listing here of the six projects, and you can see they do vary in capacity as well as location. There's one typo. The Crown Ridge there, for the most part, does go into service in December. It says November. There are 11. It should be 12 probably. Then on the far right are the revenue requirements for each of the projects.
So does the 2381 does not tie
back? Yeah, that doesn't include the true-up. So if you went back to the previous slide.
Right.
There's a $275,000 true-up.
Oh, okay. Yes.
That's not included in these numbers here. But the PTCs are, so those are netted in here. So.
Okay. So the 2381 is the difference is because of the true-up.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And then we have a similar pie chart again to show the relative distribution of the revenue requirements among the six projects. Again, Border Winds and Courtney have been in service for a while. The other projects, Crown Ridge, larger projects, have not been and won't be in service for very long in 2019 yet. There's still going to be a significant contribution there from those projects. So
59% is North Dakota, the balance.
Right.
Minnesota, yeah. South Dakota.
About 60%. And one thing that I could have pointed out on slide six here again, these are the costs. What you're not seeing here, of course, are the fuel savings from these projects. We've done some work on that. I don't know, Ryan, if you wanted to talk at all about
it. It helped me to understand it, to think about these are the costs that are offset by the production tax credits. So you're looking at costs offset by tax credits. Then in the FCR, you'll see the actual benefits associated with the projects, which is fuel-free energy. And so we look at, you know, what the production savings and MISO purchase savings are associated with that. And if you look at that, for instance, these projects are all coming in service December of 2019. So I'm moving to 2020 because then you're actually going to have production to look at. But if you look at 2020, when we back out congestion costs and integration costs, we're looking at about $5.8 million of benefits associated with just those projects that are, I believe, going into service in 19. And then, you know, if you want to look at Borders and Courtney, which have been in service, I did some math on that to kind of look at what they produced in a given year, given their capacity factors. To Commissioner Fedorchuk's questions, we had a blended capacity factor of about 47.7% for both of those projects, and those generated just under about $2 million in benefits on a North Dakota jurisdictional basis in terms of fuel-free energy.
So that would be their fuel costs that if they would have had to pay the market, MISO market rate?
Yeah, and that's LMP discounted to 90% to reflect kind of the off-peak nature of wind. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you said 5.8 on the first?
5.8 in 2020, and then it jumps considerably in 2021 to 7.6 million.
And was that for just the four new projects, Ryan?
In 2021, that's going to be with the additional projects that are going into service. But that does not include Borders and Courtney. Those would be in addition to that. And Borders and Courtney, I looked to 20, I think we don't have final capacity factors in 2018, but if you took those numbers for 2017 and applied them to 2018, you'd get 1.75 to 2 million in terms of benefits. I was just kind of roughing out the math here.
So it's that kind of full picture that people in the RTOs, et cetera, look at to say the transmission, even though it adds costs, when you balance out the generation, your customers come out ahead.
And so those numbers
for the MEP project
are just company-owned projects only, not anything you have PPAs for.
I believe that's right, Jerry. I believe that we've backed out the PPAs. Yeah. But I'll just note that's a good. We were talking earlier about the benefits of the projects. That's a one cost that maybe didn't get swept up in what I said are costs of PPAs that would flow through the FCR. So you'd want to look at those in conjunction with the benefits associated with that.
So those numbers you stated don't include those other projects?
I believe that's right. I'm hesitating a little bit because I did this a little earlier today.
Right.
So we could certainly, I can follow up with staff and confirm the numbers if that helps. It may make sense to kind of get the cost of the PPA, add that to the RER so we can show you the full picture of costs associated with the 1550 portfolio, and then we can look at the benefits as the projects start to go into service.
Because with a PPA, you're paying per kilowatt hour to them, so it's just like a fuel cost now. But if you have company owned, you're not paying their benefits on a kilowatt hour basis.
Mm-hmm.
Your kilowatt hours are free.
Pretty much. That's right. And I would just say with the PPA, if your kilowatt hour cost is lower than, for instance, LMP, I still think there are benefits associated with that project that you could count.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lastly, we did a similar kind of a implementation date scenario. We have the opposite effect going on here. Since the current rate is actually less than what we're proposing, delays here in implementing actually will create an even higher rate. Although, if you still net this with the TCR, it's still a net reduction no matter when it gets implemented. So.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the impacts of March 1 and April 1 implementation. So. That's all we had for presentation.
To that point on time of implementation, we don't have our notice period on these has expired, right? So we could make a decision on this as soon as you guys can come up with a... Okay. And then how long does it take you guys to implement once there's a decision? Would we be looking at the March 1st? Probably.
Yeah.
Well, March 1st. I forget it's already February.
We could do it. I think we can do it in between those dates, too. We could do it mid-March, probably, too.
Okay.
I like everything about March as compared to February. It's a step closer to spring.
We typically wouldn't implement a rate mid-month. We would prefer to do it at the beginning of the month.
Okay. But if we were to take an action on February 27th, that would leave you plenty of time to implement it by April 1st, right?
Yep.
And it would be impossible to think you're going to get it done by March 1st, I presume.
Let's put the question to Benj just to check. Benj, how from a commission order, how many days or weeks would you need to implement the rate?
There wouldn't be any problem. If the decision was made in February, there would be no problem in implementing the rate by April 1st.
Okay.
How about March? So I think the question maybe was, if we do this February 27th, can you implement March 1?
That would be a little bit more difficult. It would depend on when the actual order was received. I think there's the actual implementation of the rate could be executed. I think the timeline is roughly 2 weeks, but there's a bill notice that takes a little bit longer, and so that would be the potential difficult part of implementing by March 1.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we'd want to try and do that. It's just creates the possibility for something to go wrong. Sure.
So 2 weeks is kind of the
that's what I heard.
Minimum. That's what I thought I heard too. So, okay. Kind of along those same lines. So, as the tariff is currently written, you wouldn't be able to charge for the non-North Dakota ones. And obviously, we had the approval this morning. So, do you intend to file another supplemental with the tariff language change?
Yeah.
For that, in this docket versus, I mean. I wasn't sure myself which would be the more appropriate docket to file but
we could file them in both. Or it seems to me that this docket would be if the tariffs is going to relate to this rate. It seems to me like we'd want to file in this docket.
I would agree.
Yeah. Okay.
And probably, like you said, probably file in both dockets. But I think in order for the commission to approve this, the rates for these non-North Dakota projects, I think we need to have
we'll do that right away.
The tariff. Yeah. In there.
And I believe the tariff was included in the settlement, but I believe it's already had language change, so.
I don't recall either.
Okay.
We'll check. We'll check. If it's not provided, we'll make sure to get it in soon.
I kind of remember seeing something, too. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else from advocacy?
I'm good.
What about you, Adam? You had some questions, I thought, on decommissioning.
Well, yeah, that's kind of unrelated, but I noticed that under border winds, in 2015, under your hauling and disposal, costs jumped from $1.4 million to $9.4 million. So I just kind of had a question on that.
And I'm sorry, I don't think we have the right folks here to answer that question.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. When I saw the data request come in, it read that the disposal site was 600 miles away,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a bit, I'd just like to understand, why it's 600 miles away and the company decided to use a proxy for a wind asset that was located in South Dakota when this one is located in North Dakota.
Sure. Yeah, and it was a proxy, so we were just trying to come up, or actually this was Wanzek engineers were trying to use some existing experience that they'd had with an existing plant, so that's why we were using those dollars. But Adam, how about if we follow up with more specific answers this week?
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. Because that was something like, I think it was like $15,000 per, mm-hmm. Each wind turbine generator would need to be, you'd need 8 trucks, essentially. And each of those trucks would be around $15,000 per trip. Which, if you take a look at our other wind sites, they run, I think, $1,500. Per trip with similarly sized wind sites that are closer to border winds.
Okay. Yeah, I know that we just provided some of those answers not too long ago, so maybe we can have you write up those follow-ups and we'll respond to them as soon as we can. So those are good questions.
I think the question for me is, and I'm not sure if Adam had a chance to look at this, but I think the amount you're using for decommissioning cost in those separate decommissioning cases is the same as what you're using in here for calculating the revenue requirement, which includes, it's not called decommissioning, but accumulated book depreciation reserve, which I would mm-hmm. assume is decommissioning. Those amounts would match.
I believe they do. I believe the percentages that are used for the negative salvage is consistent with the decommissioning studies that we've filed. Yep. So if there was a change or a modification, again, that could flow through the true-up mechanism and
right.
be corrected that way too. I guess another thought or alternative is, since we might have some time to implement that, we could we could fold any modifications that sure. that would come up in the next couple of weeks or whatever into a final rate too, possibly. So
let's not be working on it until February 27th,
yeah.
9:30 though, and then
right.
So you will, advocacy will present the questions or define them?
At this point, we're advisory. We're actually...
Our advisory, I'm sorry.
This was some yeah. things that Adam found in his review. I think we're going to note.
Yeah, and I just got this today. I think the difference, at least when I take a look at your decommissioning collections for those sites, based on the current estimate, if I recall, it was about $4 million, but if I compare it back to 2015, when, you know, you lose that, you know, in excess of $9 million, you know, the delta would be bigger. Mm. So I'd just be curious to maybe look into that a little bit more.
Sure.
Sure.
All right. So we can expect some answers on that mm-hmm. in the near future. All right, anything else from staff, company?
No.
Commissioner Fedorchek, Commissioner Chrisman?
I'm good.
All right. The handout, as well as the audio recording of this proceeding, is now considered evidence. Is there any objection to this evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be made?
No.
All right, no objections. Is there anything else to add from either the company or staff? Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record? Seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.